King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 4th, 2020. And this is officially episode number 423. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And I am back from another two-week hiatus. I was out trying to pretend like I was young again, playing some baseball out in Arizona at the Cleveland Indians fantasy camp and having a lot of fun playing baseball for a week. It was very tiring, very physically and mentally demanding, but I love the game. That's my game. I know a lot of people love football. A lot of people love soccer. Call it football. Call it whatever you want. I enjoy all that stuff. Hockey and all that, but baseball, that's the sport I live for and love. So I got a chance to, again, like I said, be a kid again for a week out in the desert, and it took me a week to kind of recoup from that. And certainly all my friends on Facebook are pretty tired of me posting pictures of me playing baseball. So anyway, that's over and done with, and we'll see if I can afford to do it next year. Probably not, but I had a lot of fun doing it. And yeah, I missed you guys. I know you guys hopefully missed this show. And I hate taking so much time off. I did take a few weeks off in December. And here it is, February 4th, and we've only done two shows for 2020. But I'll try to make up for it for you guys. And I don't like taking a whole lot of time off. But yeah, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. But we got some news to catch up on here tonight. A lot of really out there stuff. We're all over the place. It's not just UFO stuff tonight, and it's not just cryptid stuff, and not just like Loch Ness Monster stuff tonight. So we're going to be all over the place, all the way from Argentina to Washington to British Columbia to New Zealand. We're all over the place tonight with news. We've got news from each category. So some cryptid news, some UFO news, some ghost news tonight as well. So did I say UFOs? Sure I did. I'm sure I did. So yeah, we're all over the place tonight with news. And before I get carried away, I just want to let you know that you can also follow the show through Facebook, Twitter as well. So I'm on the social media platforms. So tonight I'll talk about a lot of these stories, and I'll put links out through Facebook. Also be publishing the show after the show is over through Podbean. So it's going to go out to all the different podcast hosts that are out there. You name it, it's probably out there. Podbean, then it goes to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, TuneIn, you name it. It's pretty much everywhere. Also have a YouTube channel as well if you are into that sort of thing. So it's everywhere. And also these news stories as links will also be put in through Facebook and Twitter. Those two are connected. So if you're on one or the other, you're not missing out on any other content. They're connected, joint at the hip. So I do like to publish links out about these stories throughout the week so you can get the information that I'm pushing out. And if you're new to the show or you haven't listened in a long time, this show focuses on pretty much the top stories. And I try to stay balanced. I'm not a true believer. So if you want to hear that UFOs are real and ghosts are real and Bigfoot is sitting in my room behind me, I'm sorry. It's not the show for you. I hate to say that. I can't appeal to everybody. I'm trying to be balanced, but I am covering these stories, and I'll only present the information that's presented to me. So I'm not making things up. I'm not adding anything. I'm just reporting the news as I see it. Unfortunately, a lot of these things do need a skeptical take on it. And that's what I try to do most of the time, because stories are pushed out to make money. Let's not beat around the bush here. A lot of the stories, especially in British tabloids, are put out there to get people to tune in to sell advertisements. I mean, that's just the way we have. So that's why we have these stories. It's unfortunately just how things work, especially on the internet, the interwebs, whatever you want to call it these days. So I try to cut through all that. So some stories I don't talk about, some stories I don't even mention about certain people who are purportedly UFO experts that publish things constantly on those types of websites. Won't talk about them. No, there is no UFO base or skeletons on Mars. Sorry, we're not talking about that stuff. But I do try to keep, especially the mainstream stuff, we're going to talk about that on a week-to-week basis. Anyway, I also talk about paranormal conferences and conventions on this. I think it's fantastic, and if you're a fan of the paranormal, you should be going out to these things. You should be interacting with people. It's fantastic. It's a nice release if you've had something happen to you and you want to talk about it to somebody. Great thing to go do. So on my official website for the show, paranewsinsider.com, I have a link there at the top. Way at the top. No, not that high. A little bit down. There it is. Events tab right there. You can click on that, and we'll take you to the latest and greatest events happening here in 2020. I do have them separated by a majority of the content that's covered by those events. Most events are ghost-based events, but it doesn't mean that you won't find a UFO or cryptid speaker at them. It just means that's the majority, that's the focus of those events. So I try to keep them organized as best as possible. And I want to mention the latest event that I added about a half hour ago, and that was the Kansas City Paranormal Conference, also known as the KC Paracon. I had that event listed last year, and for some reason it was sitting in my to-be-determined pile, but I did receive an email a couple of days ago and finally got around to adding that. So the Kansas City Paranormal Conference takes place March 15th, 2020 in Kansas City, Missouri. And you can find more information about the Kansas City Paranormal Conference at kcparacon.net. And check that out. Check out all the other events. And you can, I'm telling you, this is going to be a big one too. I think somebody from some big TV show is going to be there. Some dude from a ghost hunting TV show is going to be there. That's all I'll say. I just want to pique your interest. So definitely, and I'm very proud of this list. I think I've done a pretty darn good job. If I could pat myself on the back. There you go. All right. I think I do a pretty good job of putting together this list, and I do it from my heart. I do it from the bottom. Maybe the sides of my heart as well, not just the bottom. Maybe the top of my heart as well. I don't know. The whole thing. 360 heart action right there because I feel it. I love this. And I'm telling you, this is one of the best ways to get to know the paranormal. Forget these TV shows. Forget most of these books, too. There's some great books out there. But meeting these people in the trenches, the people that are actually out there doing this stuff, it's fantastic. It doesn't matter the field you're into. So get out there. Make that your New Year's resolution. Get out there and go to one of these paranormal conferences and conventions. And what else was... I have something. Well, on top of that events stuff, sometimes I do speak at these things. I don't have anything lined up this year as far as conventions are concerned, but I do have a couple of private appearances. Looks like I got to get my own website updated. Yikes. It's February, Brian. Jeez. Well, I'll get around to it eventually. But let's see. Some more stuff I want to talk about real quick. Oh, yeah. Before we jump into the news, I want to talk about the last couple of weeks. Jeez, it seems like it's been a month. Yeah, no more Nessie stories. Don't worry about it. Not this week. Hopefully not next week either. But we do have some lake monster stories. I think lake monsters are fun. But yeah, I want to mention the television show Project Blue Book. So this was it 21st, I believe it came back on, my first week taking off. So I missed it. I didn't get to see it live, but I did go to historychannel.com, was able to backtrack and watch the season two. First two episodes have been on, and I was kind of looking forward to this because they were talking about Roswell, the big story, which is really weird. Project Blue Book talking about Roswell. They never really investigated that. Anyway, part two of the story wrapped up on the Roswell incident last week. And in case you haven't heard, tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, or check your local listings, as they always say. Tonight, they're talking about Area 51. I can't wait for that one. I'm not going to stay up. I need my beauty sleep. I'll catch you tomorrow. And just like previous episodes, the show, man, it really took an overly dramatic take on the incidents that they portray. Just like the background plot between the characters that is mostly fictionalized, the story of the UFO sightings are really loosely based on those that reported things pretty much around the late 1970s and 1990s. So most of this stuff, they're acting like it happened way back then. It didn't. These are reports and things, personal encounters that were reported several decades later. And I'll tell you, it seemed like just about everything ever uncovered about Roswell was jammed into these last 2 weeks and spun into a nice dramatic story for television. I mean, while frustrating, I think it was really good. I think they did make good television. It's a good popcorn munching kind of thing. I just hope people realize that despite being based on interviews, witnesses, and documents, really none of this is actually proven to happen. And a lot of the stuff portrayed in this, especially this episode, it's patched together. There's a lot of pure fiction about Roswell, and there's a lot of things that came out that kind of contradict each other. And they kind of try to patch that together in a way to make it sound like it all happened at the same time. So really kind of overwhelming in a way, but still it was just fun to watch all the things thrown about that we've all heard and read about Roswell, all thrown into two episodes of this show. I mean, yeah, Roswell wasn't even investigated, didn't even appear within Project Blue Book. The actual Project Blue Book, except for I think there was a mention in one report. And I tell you, for me, again, to talk about, I said this season one, it's frustrating to see the words based on real events flashed on the screen. And it's also on the History Channel. So everything should be accurate, in my opinion. If it's on the History Channel, it should be true. But there's a lot of artistic freedom, a lot of patchwork of these stories. And from a lot of different sources, from different angles. And a lot of these sources really aren't even credible. Some of this information that was shown on these episodes has been pretty much dismantled by some people. So just take it in as a TV show. It's entertainment. I mean, it is a pretty darn good show, I think. And pretty much, I would say, I'm throwing this out there, probably the best paranormal show currently on television, in my opinion, because it's not dramatic reenactments. It's not a bunch of clowns running around in the dark with flashlights. It's not a bunch of guys walking around the woods at night screaming and yelling. This is taking historical things and making them into drama, which you don't really get to see on television. And UFOs has a very heavy history into all this stuff. So I think they've done a pretty darn good job doing all this. But again, Area 51 tonight and the Hopkinsville story coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm really excited about that one. That's going to be a fun one. So if you don't know anything about that, don't read anything about it. Just wait for it. It's going to be, they've got to do a bang up job on that one. I cannot wait. And last, before we hit the news, one other thing. I talk about this, I think, every year. Punxsutawney Phil. I know Jim Mallard knows who that is. Jim Mallard's hanging out in the chat room. Can I name drop? Like I said, it's too late. Punxsutawney Phil, 134th year he's predicted the weather. And he's usually wrong. But I've been out there before. Been out to Gobbler's Knob. But there was nobody there. Nobody there. It's like New Year's Day, I think. There was nobody there. Got my picture there with the little door that he comes out of. But less than a month later, well, I guess about a month later, 40,000 people were jammed in that little park just outside of town. Crazy. Anyway, he predicted an early spring, which this morning when I walked outside, 54 degrees in the morning. It was very nice. But right now it's 30. Wait, let me be accurate about this. 32 degrees and sleet. So I don't know. I might be driving out to Pennsylvania, up to Punxsutawney pretty soon, to the library where he's currently stationed, and letting him have it, basically. But yeah, he predicted an early spring on Sunday. It was not only the day of the big game, but yes, the annual Groundhog Day. And this is the second consecutive year that Phil predicted an early spring. The five previous years, he predicted six more weeks of winter. Wow. And just in case you're keeping score, Phil's accuracy is about 39% or so, depending upon your source. And so I guess you'd be better off just flipping a coin yourself or coming up with your own weather prognosticating animal. Sally the Sock could probably do a better job. Here in Ohio, we have our official whistle pig. We call him a whistle pig. I don't know. I guess it's all the same thing. A groundhog, whistle pig. There's like 20 different names for these little rats that dig up your yard. Our prognosticator is called Buckeye Chuck. There's actually two different little groundhogs here in Ohio, but there he is. Yeah, that's one of the statues. Isn't that by the library, I think? I don't know. Yeah, Buckeye Chuck. He also predicted an early spring this year. There's two in Ohio. I can't remember the other dude's name. He's not as famous. Staten Island Chuck from New York. He also predicted an early spring. Thanks, Chuck. Potomac Phil of Washington, D.C. General Beauregard Lee of Jackson, Georgia, and Sir Walter Wally of Raleigh, North Carolina, disagree. They say six more weeks of winter. Well, I say groundhog sandwich is what I say. I don't know why people still follow this stuff, but it's cute, I guess. It gives us something to talk about, a little distraction. But yeah, that's my report. I don't have my picture. It's on Facebook. I'm not going to bother. There's Jim. And Punxsutawney Phil. Is that it? What's he eating? His eyes coming apart? What is that? It's spooky. Anyway, let's jump into cryptid news this week. Why not? This is what we're here for, right? You guys tuned in to hear about the news, right? Just making sure. Okay. Cryptid news. So as I mentioned, no Loch Ness Monster stories, but there has been a few lake monster stories that have been popping up in the news over the last couple of weeks. But the most interesting, in my opinion, yes, just my opinion, pretty much, is out of Argentina. So I'm not sure if you've heard about this, but really, probably one of the more intriguing creatures that people don't even really know too much about. A 34-year-old British tourist was kayaking in the Nahuel Huapi Lake in the Patagonia region of Argentina when he disappeared. So this Nahuel Huapi Lake is a pretty big glacial lake surrounded by the snow-capped Andes Mountains. And that's my best Spanish I can do on the radio without sounding crazy. Kind of have to enunciate things. I don't want to get all crazy Spanishy. But anyway, it's a pretty big glacial lake. The snow-capped Andes Mountains are surrounded. It's just picturesque, no matter where you're at in this lake, but it's pretty big. And the weather conditions can vary around the lake due to that terrain, due to having high mountains, valleys, And just the way the lake is laid out, it's not like a nice round lake or a octagon. What is an octagonal lake? It's just like a splat on the map. It's just kind of all over the place. So weather conditions can vary, and probably played an unfortunate key to this person's demise. So sadly, the remains of this kayaker were later found about 20 miles away from where he had last been seen. Parts of the lake had actually been closed due to high winds, which again, more than likely, were the cause of the death of the kayaker. So while the lake is beautiful, the surrounding areas are absolutely stunning. It's probably not one that I would personally kayak in unless it was pretty much perfect conditions. It's pretty big. Some of the areas are pretty wide. And I'll tell you, I've done some crazy things in a kayak, pretty much. I put myself in some questionable weather conditions, let me just put it to you that way, over the years as a kayaker. Some thunderstorms, high winds. Yeah, not very smart things, but it's all in the name of fun. Unfortunately, for this guy, it's a pretty big risk to take in a huge lake like that without a lot of people around. So this explanation of this kayaker probably satisfied a lot of people. But that was until a video surfaced. It surfaced, pun intended, a few days later of what appears to be a large monster swimming beneath the surface of the lake. So I do have a video of that, or I have a picture of the video, let me say that, and I'll put that in the chat room. So if you're not in the chat room, you are missing out on this extra dimension of the show. There he is. Throw him in the chat room right there. And so look at that. That's scary. Just stunning. Absolutely stunning of this creature. Not really. The video, as well as the photo that I posted in the chat room, doesn't really show much. Doesn't really show much at all, other than what looks to be a wave in the middle of a narrow stretch of lake. But it certainly caused some panic in the region, and the video was the subject of many news reports in the area, all over South America, to be honest. During the video, waves could be heard crashing against the shore, and my guess is the waves were just created by the wind and gave the perception of something beneath the water. A local legend exists of a creature named Najolito. Najolito is a creature that many times is described as a giant serpent. Pretty much the same description as the Loch Ness Monster as well. Sometimes described as appearing just like a plesiosaur. Sounds familiar, right? In fact, a three-hour drive south of the lake, there's a small lake, very small lake, very tiny. It's kind of like a large pond, actually. Very large pond. It's not even a lake, I don't think. But it's called Laguna del Plesiosaurio, Lake of the Plesiosaur, which is purportedly where a few other sightings have occurred. Again, it's a pretty small lake. It's not even connected to this other Nahuelhuapi Lake, so it's not even connected, but this legend is huge. How huge? Well, rumors of this creature have persisted since the late 1800s, and the media actually took a heavy interest as early as 1922, so that's about a decade before our buddy the Loch Ness Monster became popular. So yeah, these waves out there, and I'll be honest. I'll wrap up what I think about what's in this video with this next story. So I kind of do two in one here, I guess. In case you're keeping score in the chat room there, I'm going to put a link in the chat room. I know Dita's not here. She's the queen of links. Shame on her for missing the show, but you know, we all have things to do. She's probably working in the garden. So there's a link there for you guys. Don't worry. If you're not listening live in the chat room, you're not in the chat room, or you're listening live somewhere else. I don't know where you're at. You don't have access to these links. Fear not. I will be putting them, again, on Facebook, which will then go through Twitter. So be sure to follow me, Paranews Insider, Facebook, and at Paranews Insider on Twitter. So I did mention a couple of lake monster stories popping up in the last few weeks, one of which was another one of the underdogs of you know, the lake monster. You know, you guys know the big dog Loch Ness Monster. And now we have Najolito. So kind of an unknown. And we've talked about this next underdog lake monster, that of Ogopogo of Lake Okanagan in British Columbia, Canada. Doesn't get enough respect, I don't think, at all. Video taken by Blake Newdorf and his father, who were out on a dock at the lake fishing back on July 10th of 2018. That was so long ago. Well, their video finally hit YouTube on January 2nd of this year, and it's taken off. Last I checked a couple of days ago, probably, I think it was probably about a week ago now, there was about 50,000 views on the original video and several thousand on other sites, as well as news stories covering it from those British tabloids. Stories out there. Blake, he says he's a little skeptical about the sightings. He does get a little defensive, though, in his YouTube comments section when people offer some skeptical perceptions, though. So I'm a little skeptical of him being skeptical, if you're following. Honestly, while it does kind of sort of look like a creature just below the surface, to me, I know he's going to get mad, but it's a wave. It looks like a wave to me. The wave hypothesis has become a big part of the argument about lake monster sightings. But where are the boats? So somebody said there was a boat in the video. And there is a boat in the video, but it's pretty far away. And we don't see anything that's gone through that area. But you don't have to have a boat 5 feet away to make a wave in the middle of a lake. There's a lot of other things that can happen. It's not a log. It's not a deer. It's not a fox. It's not an elk, but it's a wave. To me, probably not done by a boat. Many times in lakes such as Okanagan and Loch Ness, there are events called a seitch. And a seitch, if you want to look it up, you don't believe me, you can look it up. A seitch is spelled S-E-I-C-H-E. And it's essentially the water restoring itself to a flat status on a surface based on gravity after wind or some other elements have moved the water to another side of the lake. So think about, I try to explain it like a bathtub. And I talk about this a lot when I do presentations, especially when I talk about the Loch Ness Monster. So think about a bathtub. You're in the bathtub, you push the water to one side with your hands. What happens? It hits the back and it comes back at you as a wave. Hits you and then it goes back again. And eventually it stops. The waves just kind of level out. So what happens is the wind will push water to one side of a lake. And the water will actually be much higher on one end. So with a seitch, the water on one end, maybe several inches or even a couple of feet higher due to the winds. And the water will eventually try to move back and forth to stabilize itself. And when the winds die down, the lake will then eventually stabilize, and it creates waves, especially in the middle or towards the edges, depends on the shape of the water. And it does create these waves that seemingly come out of nowhere. No seemingly explanation for them. And that's usually one way of describing it. And how I know it happens is because especially the shape of certain lakes like Okanagan and Loch Ness. These are both very long, very thin lakes. If you also look at the one from this last story, Nahuelhuapi Lake, not sure the exact area in which this happens, but a lot of parts of this lake are very long and thin, and again, surrounded by mountains, which helps this effect take place. And I think a lot of sightings are created by this. I'm not saying they all are. Just saying that this is probably one that people don't really realize or count on that happens. Probably happens quite frequently. And it can fool the observer with a wave, again, that comes out of seemingly nowhere. I'm not saying it explains everything, but that's my take on it. That's what I think. And let me throw this link in the chat room. If you guys want to, I have the YouTube video. I really do. You can see that as well. Let me throw that in there here. A second. So see what you're missing out on. All these fantastic links from all these sources everywhere. And if you do go to paranormal websites, yeah, they do give you websites to things. If you're on coast-to-coast website, they give you links to things. But not always like original source. I like going to the original source. Because all news, basically anything you're reading, usually comes from somebody else. And it's interpreted, it's rewritten, it's copied and pasted. I like to follow that rabbit hole down to the original source so it's not affected by other people adding their own two cents in and cutting through the BS, basically, and getting you to the heart of the story. Somebody else ever say that? I don't know. They did, I apologize. But what about Bigfoot? We're talking about cryptid news. We talk about these lake monsters. But what about Bigfoot? We have not had a Bigfoot story in quite a while. Definitely not this year. Well, he's back. Bigfoot is alive and well, hanging out in Washington, one of the more popular states for sightings of the creature. And it's being reported by none other than the Washington State Department of Transportation. Great folks. Spent some time in Washington. I love running on their green and white ferries that go in the water up there in the Pacific Northwest. But anyway, January 22nd, the WSDOT East Twitter handle tweeted out three variations of a picture of what appeared to be a Sasquatch walking behind a tree in a traffic camera placed near the Sherman Pass at State Route 20. And let me show you that picture if you've not seen it. Goodness. You've got to see this. Oh, no, I don't have it. Where's it at? It's gone. Oh, there it is. Got it. So really, you know, again, they showed three pictures. It was kind of a compilation. They kind of zoomed in. They took one wide. Well, I guess that's a couple different pictures. But you see it's a dark shadow behind a tree and some heavy snow. So don't see how any person would get up there unless they had snowshoes on. We're looking at a mountain pass area, Sherman Pass. Not a great plow job, guys. Dangerous conditions. And there's Bigfoot hanging out by a tree. Wow. They got it on tape. Scary. So this sighting took the Northwest by storm. Not snowstorm, just by storm. But in the melee, a lot of people didn't realize this. And it kind of pooped on some people's parties. When other sharp-eyed observers went to the same traffic cam and saw that purported Sasquatch still hanging out hours later, and in some cases a couple of days later, in the exact same spot, in the exact same position. So at first, the official explanation was that it was really nothing more than the base of a tree that looked like a Sasquatch in motion. I mean, it looks really really good. Looks like a body leaning forward. You see some legs. It looks pretty good, really. It's really a really cool effect if it really is just the tree. But a later tweet stated that, quote, "our signals, sign shop maker manager knows the truth behind it," unquote, which is kind of a weird thing for them to tweet out. So this might be a wood cutout put up by the Washington State Department of Transportation for maybe a prank. I guess it's not the first time they've had purported video or photographic evidence of Bigfoot. This happened actually a couple of years ago. It was a very similar thing with trees. And they stated that here's Bigfoot. We've got a pack of Bigfoot. It was like a family of Bigfoot. But again, sharp-eyed observers later posted pictures of these trees still in the same spot. But this one is pretty interesting. But that's not all. On January 24th, the Washington State Department of Transportation shared a video, not just photos, a video of what appeared to be a Sasquatch-like figure walking along a snowy wildlife crossing along Interstate 90. The video was very grainy, but did offer a figure that appeared to walk very similar to what we've seen in the Patterson-Gimli Patty film years ago, a long time ago. So I have a picture of that video. And this is different. I'll do a composite. So I'll do one kind of put together. They do show like an overview, then all of a sudden they kind of show it zoomed in. So on the right there is the overview, and then on the left is a cutout of their zoomed in version. So you really can't make out anything, but it looks like somebody or something, a bipedal creature, a bipedal person, whatever, wearing like a onesie, maybe. It's all like one uniform. It's really hard to tell. I mean, you really can't tell. But it's moving, and if you watch the video, it moves pretty well, like a squatch. But yeah, not conclusive. No way to really tell. And they like to... I like to fool around with this stuff, and I think it's really good that they do that, because they do get attention for the weather, they do get attention for some of these places, and they do get people to really pay attention to the conditions, and I think they're just having fun with this whole Bigfoot thing. So I wouldn't take it too seriously, but it's really interesting that they're finding these things. There's no snowshoes on that dude, I don't think. Maybe there is. It's hard to tell. Anyway, moving along to UFO news this week, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to tell you, I told you so. And you're like, what do you mean by that, Dr. Brian? Well, New Zealand residents feverishly reported numerous UFO sightings in the sky last week. As expected, Elon Musk's SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket deposited 60 more Starlink satellites, and again, caused numerous people to report UFOs. I told you it was going to happen, and here we are. This is the fourth trip, and this launch was delayed actually shortly, a few days, I think, by weather before actually being launched. And I knew it was going to cause problems. Anytime it goes to a new region where people haven't seen anything like this, you will see this stuff. So yeah, the fourth trip, we got a few more coming this year. So how many satellites? 60 satellites, 240 up there now? Good grief. In their defense of the people who reported this, many people did report what looked like satellites on social media. That's what they said. They said it looked like satellites. But again, hopefully as more launches take place, not that I want more of these to take place, I think it's crowding the skies as it is already. Hopefully people will get used to this sight of a long string of lights in the sky, these satellites being deployed in a long line, that people will start to recognize this as these stories get out there and people are seeing them all over the place. And the big UFO story of the week, disclosure. That's what you want. That's what you're asking for. That's what it says on your sign. That's what you want. It's a word on the tip of the tongue of anyone who has a connection to the UFO field. Then it's something, you know, especially here in the United States, everyone's pushing for. Although I'll say it, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't think the government knows half of what we think they do. I think they're just as lost, if not more lost, than most of the researchers out there that are looking for answers. But good news. If you live in the United Kingdom, you're in for a treat. I guess if you live here in the United States, you're also in for a treat because you'll be able to see this as well. Since the early 1950s, the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense, the MOD, has documented and even investigated cases of UFO sightings. Well, that is until December 1st, 2009, when the agency created a policy change that stated they would no longer investigate these UFO sightings. The MOD has published some cases online. If you know where to look, there's plenty of them actually already out there, as well as through hard copies over the years. But after an inquiry filed under the Freedom of Information Act by PA Media, a British news agency, MOD officials decided, according to a Royal Air Force spokesperson, quote, "It would be better to publish these records rather than continue sending documents to the National Archives," unquote. Many of these records would become classified, sent, you know, when they were sent to the National Archives, they became classified, and they would sit there for many years before being released or declassified and sent out to people via the Freedom of Information requests. But now they've decided, why not? Let's just put them all out there for everybody to read. We don't have to do all the silliness anymore. So a clearance process is underway, and the information will be available online. That's right, online. It's going to be available for all to see, for everyone to disseminate sometime this year. And it's also going to be available on a dedicated government website. It said that the file should be available sometime within the first quarter of 2020, but I wouldn't be surprised if it took a little bit longer. And like I said, there's a lot of UFO cases that are already out there from the UK, but now I guess they're putting them all out there. I mean, wouldn't we love to see that here in the United States? That would just be pretty awesome. And the U.S. government has kind of done a similar thing years ago. They did have a dedicated website with some information. It was kind of cheesy. It kind of hokey. They did include some documents that were declassified about some events, some things, including Roswell, I believe. Roswell was in those documents, but it wasn't a whole lot. It's not enough to satisfy the thirst and the hunger for some people that want more and more information. Congrats to the United Kingdom. I'm glad that they're stepping forward and saying, here, this is what we've got. But I think if they did that here in the United States, people would still claim that there's redacted information or top secret stuff that's still not being given out. No matter how much information the United States gives out, it's probably never going to be enough for some people. Yeah, and Elon Musk, I just saw him on, he was on Iron Man 2. I was watching that again. He's in the movie. He's testing his spaceship sometime in the next couple of weeks, I believe, getting that ready to get launched. We're going to Mars. That's crazy. This is going to be a big year for space travel, for talking about space, and especially Mars coming up this fall. You're going to be tired of hearing about Mars. It's going to be all over the place. Nobody's talking about it now, except for me, I guess. But we're going to be hearing a lot about Mars this summer and this fall as everyone's going to be launching stuff to Mars because we're going to be in the position when you launch things, it's going to be the shortest distance. It's going to be easiest for these ships to get there. So a lot of satellites to be deployed. I don't know if Elon Musk is going to launch himself in a Tesla inside of a jet to Mars. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but you're going to hear a lot about stuff going up to the red planet this year. So strap in for that. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we do have news from all of the aspects of the paranormal. So we did talk about cryptid. We talked about UFO. What about ghosts? Zach Bagans. How ghosty does that get? Very ghosty, kind of scary, actually. I made mention of a new book a few weeks ago featuring Ghost Adventures star Zach Bagans. So Bagans' effort is titled Ghost Hunting for Dummies, very aptly named, and is part of the ongoing series of books that attempts to explain many different topics in the simplest of terms, generally by experts of various fields. So I'll be honest, when I heard about this book and I saw it was getting pushed out around the holidays in December, I was not happy to see Zach Bagans put in charge of explaining the entire ghost field for the rest of us, being the flagship person to explain all ghostly avenues of everything. Yeah, one guy, I do not choose Zach Bagans to represent myself. But apparently he had some uncredited help along the way. And did I just call Zach a dummy? Well, sure. Yeah. Well, and you'll see why. So Kenny Biddle, if you're from Pennsylvania, you're probably familiar with Kenny Biddle if you're in the paranormal. Kenny Biddle is a Pennsylvania-based skeptic, but he's also a paranormal nerd. So yeah, he's a skeptic, but he loves the paranormal at the same time. Kind of a weird dude. But he's into all sorts of cool sci-fi stuff, and he does go to a lot of events and things. Good guy. Yeah, he's a skeptic, but he's a solid dude. And he wanted to, well, he took the time to read the book. Now that he wanted to, it kind of came up. I didn't want to read the book. I don't blame him. I don't want to read it either. But yeah, he was offered a chance to review the book on a podcast. So, well, he ordered the book, and he read the book. And calling Zach a dummy here. One of the funniest parts of his written review online is that the title, Ghost Hunting for Dummies, has a small 4 in the title. So the word 4 is extremely small. And the book appears to be called Ghost Hunting Dummies, which is, again, kind of fairly accurate in my opinion. If you haven't seen it and you're in the chat room, you're in luck. You're in luck. I got a picture of the front cover of the book, and you can see I'm not lying. I'm not making it up. It's pretty darn small. And I don't know about you, but I think Zach looks weird in this. Something's wrong with him. What about that head? And it looks like he's reaching out trying to grab you. Ghost Hunting Dummies. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just kind of a weird cover. I mean, right there, it's just not professional. Just spooky. That's scary enough as it is. You don't have to open the book to get scared, really. Yeah, he just looks weird. Anyway, Kenny Biddle notes that the book appears to have been rushed into print. And there's a few people that have commented on Amazon about that as well. There's numerous typos, numerous misspellings, repeated and missing words throughout the 426 pages of the book. Another interesting note is that there's no references used in the book. And that's, I guess that happens a lot with these Four Dummies books. But that's usually a red flag of any kind of research book. Whenever people are doing these kind of things, it's hard to really get all that information yourself, coming from yourself. Now, I've written a couple of how-to ghost books in my day, and basically they were all my opinion, so I didn't have any references in those, but I slowly learned that having resources in a book adds to your credibility. So some of my latest efforts, my latest books I've had of nonfiction had references. It's just how you write books, kids. So I guess all of the wisdom, direction, knowledge, information is coming directly from Bagans. Or is it? Did it? Throughout the book, Biddle began to see different writing styles, which if you're a reader of books, you read a lot of books, you pick up on this stuff right away. You can tell when somebody is changing their style. It doesn't happen often in professionally written books. You see it sometimes in not-so-professional books, and there's a reason for that. And he also noticed that some of the information he was reading seemed kind of familiar, as though he had actually read it somewhere else. That's because he did. Biddle researched some of the various lines of the book and uncovered, and this is not hard to do, folks. You can do this yourself. You can get a book, you can type in a couple sentences into Google, and it'll pop up. Believe me, I've done this. Searched various lines of the book and uncovered that numerous sections of the book were taken directly from a number of websites, including Troy Taylor, Skeptic Joe Nickel, and he bashes skeptics a lot in this book, yet he stole directly from Joe Nickel. Even one of the podcast hosts here on the Paranormal King Radio Network, not myself, don't want to name names, but stealing the work of other people, that's not cool. Biddle, with the help of others, was able to find 38 examples of plagiarism with at least 20 pages containing information taken directly from Troy Taylor and his copyrighted material off of his website. So yes, websites, when people write articles, that's copyrighted material. You can't just take it and put it in your own book to get paid for it. It's called plagiarism. That's a no-no. Biddle contacted a number of the affected authors as well as the parent company of the Dummies brands of books with the findings. A senior acquisitions editor at John Wiley & Sons contacted Biddle and stated that they're adding source information to the e-book, which is, I don't know if it's been updated, but soon, I guess. And eventually, the print book will also have some changes. I mean, who's going to edit that? Who's going to go through that and verify all these things? Are they actually going to add sources? Is that really enough? I mean, I'll be honest. When I heard about this, I was a little shocked, but I wasn't surprised. Does that make sense? As an author, again, I've published 6 books, and I write blogs, and not as much as I should, I know. But I've written several blogs. I've had things taken from me. I've had things stolen. As an author, I'm outraged. And I don't care if it's Zach Bagans. I don't care if it's Stephen King. Stealing the work of someone else and putting your name on it is wrong, and it's illegal. And I'll tell you, my foray into the writing world came at the hands of somebody who tried a similar thing. My first book I published back in 2008. I thought it was going to be nice. I thought I was going to be generous. I was going to offer it as a PDF file. So all you had to do was pay, I think, $1. And you could download the PDF file and you could just read it on your computer. I thought that was a generous thing to do. I wanted the information out there. I wasn't concerned about making money, nor you're not going to make a lot of money writing books, by the way. But I wanted my information to get out there. And my book is copyrighted. It says right on the inside cover. It's a legal requirement for me to have published my book through a self-publishing company. You have to have all that information in there. So yes, it's copyrighted. Offered as a PDF file. Thought I was going to do something nice, try to reach a larger audience. Unfortunately, my very first sale was a PDF file, and it was to a guy who ultimately decided to take upon himself to print out a few copies of this and put it into his own binding and put it on eBay to sell for himself for $5 a piece. That's not legal. You can't do that. You're selling somebody else's copyrighted material for yourself. He had done this with a number of other authors, one of which contacted me, and it took about 5 of us to finally get eBay to pull down his page, threatening them with lawsuits. And money talks. And the other stuff walks after a while, but it unfortunately, these companies, it's sometimes you got to bully these people. How it's going to happen with this book or what's going to happen, I don't know. I mean, if he would have stole, if I find out he stole my stuff, I'm going after the dude. I don't care who he is or how nice his hair looks. I'm going after the dude. You don't do that. I've had this happen with a few different websites, a few different blogs might have been stolen. Not a huge deal. But still, to put it in a book, you know, probably one of the biggest selling ghost books on the market right now, and to have that stuff stolen, That's a big deal. That's not good. Kenny Biddle, he points out that plagiarism is rampant in the paranormal, especially online. That's very true. Websites and their content are also generally copyrighted material. And again, I've been a victim of this, people copying, pasting my blogs and articles, calling them their own, or putting on their own websites and not attributing me. It's very annoying, unprofessional. But when you get into actually making money by publishing it in a book under your name and his own publishing company, basically, Zach Bagans Publishing, so that's even worse. That's when it crosses into legality things. Looking at these Amazon reviews, very positive. It's been overly positive for the most part, except for people receiving torn covers, apparently. It's happened a few times. Seems like most people are fans of the show, and they're pretty oblivious to the fact that most of this information, I shouldn't say most, a good chunk of this information is taken from other people. And we'll see whatever happens to this. The book is still for sale on Amazon. They've not pulled it down as far as I know. I haven't checked in the last few hours, but I can't imagine they're going to do that. They should, if enough people complain about it, or if it's really brought out outside of this. But Kenny Biddle published a blog on the Skeptical Inquirer, and it's going to get a lot of attention. I've not seen it pop up on a lot of paranormal news sites, but I want to talk about it because it's a big deal. Not because I don't like Zach Bagans. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Not a fan of the show. I know people are mad about that, but I don't care. Just not a fan of that show at all. Not. Granted, it's brought a lot of people to the paranormal. I can't complain about that. I'm not saying that all TV shows are garbage. I just don't think you should get your education of how to investigate from a TV show. It's nice that you're inspired by that. But I don't like that. I don't like the attitude. I don't like how it's portrayed on TV. But I can deal with all that. This is a different thing. Plagiarism is illegal, to get paid taking somebody else's work. And I've not heard anything from Troy Taylor. I've not heard anything from some other people that were affected by that. But I'm putting the seatbelt on. And I'm going to watch this. And hopefully something is done. I'm not sure how far this is going to go, but I'm steaming. I'm mad about this. It's just not right. You don't do that kind of stuff. But we shall see. And I will be back next week. Fear not. Not taking any more time off in the near future. So you're stuck with me. You're stuck with me. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight in the chat room. I really do appreciate all you guys. Jim Mallard from the Mallard Report showing up. Pete, Alice, Charles, everybody in the chat room, very much appreciative. I don't know, where's Dita? Has anyone seen her? She's not appearing anywhere. Anyway, we better see her next week. And I will see you next week. Well, maybe I won't see you. That would be kind of spooky. But at least you'll hear from me next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And above all else, I missed a line. Always keep your mind slightly ajar. You got it. And just like the Journey guys sing, you know the song. You've heard it in the jukebox at your favorite bar, or maybe delicatessen. I don't know. Don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.